You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Think about those moments when it seemed pretty much the whole nation was gathered around the TV set. The moon landing in 1969, a Super Bowl, a hit TV show, these days maybe Game of Thrones. My next guest believes it's that time in front of the TV that might be the secret weapon that helps future space travelers handle those ultra-long voyages. Jan Vandenbulk is a professor of media psychology at the University of Michigan. Welcome. Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
So we know one day a manned spacecraft is going to blast off for deep space exploration, and those are going to be the first humans ever to deal with not seeing the Earth.
Right.
And years of travel with not a lot to do until you get to your destination. What do we know about what that might do to behavior and thoughts?
I think up until now, any space mission has involved a lot of work. But when we reach out to something like Mars, it's going to be a lot of waiting. And it's not just waiting. There won't be any point of reference. You know, day and night won't make a difference. Mondays and Wednesdays won't make a difference. So that's what made me think, okay, is there something in our psychology that helps us distinguish between morning and noon and between Sundays and Thursdays? And that's how I started thinking, yeah, the media used to do that. They don't do it so much anymore because now we have DVD boxes and streaming video. But before, noon was a certain radio show that came on. And the evening, you know, you weren't supposed to, at least when I grew up, you weren't supposed to watch television until after a certain show came on. And so those little things told us what time of day and even what day of the week or what time of the year it was.
So it gives a sense of structure.
Structure, exactly.
But there are those TV moments when it seems, I remember setting the alarm to get up for the royal wedding. Things that pull us together.
Yes. So that's a weird phenomenon because, like, if you study something like audiences, media audiences, or the audience of this show, it's all individuals at home listening to the radio, watching television. They're not in the same room together, and it still creates a bond. And a bond comes from experiencing something big at the same time. Again, something that's lost now that we have streaming video and that you can watch it in the morning and I can watch it 2 years from now. But there used to be a time that if you wanted to see something or hear something, you had to be there together with everybody else.
I almost think that when I reference Game of Thrones, because I'm a huge fan and it's like an incredibly popular show, which they release globally because of the spoiler alerts. Like, you had better watch that episode on Sunday because you can bet on Monday everybody's going to be screaming about the Red Wedding. So we still kind of have that experience.
Yes, certainly. And it still has that effect on us. And I think that's why we feel so bad about spoilers. Or another weird phenomenon is, it doesn't apply to everyone, but there's a lot of people, if you record a sports program, you know, you're probably not going to watch it because it's not live. You're not there while it's happening. Well, you weren't going to be there anyway because you were going to watch it from home. But it does something to us.
Or you're my husband who records Manchester United, has it, and then, God forbid, he sees anything that lets him know. He hides from the internet. He will not listen to sport. He does not want to hear the score, and it ruins it. So he can watch it as if it was brand new, but he has to go to great lengths.
Well, and that's one of the fascinating things about the media, because sometimes when you study media, people think, well, you know, media are trivial. So, you know, studying it must be trivial. Now, what I do may be trivial, but the media aren't trivial because it's such a large part of our lives. Look at all the trouble we have staying away from Facebook at night or not answering any emails. You know, there's so many ways in which they're part of our lives that we need to be aware of it.
So how would this, do you see, play out in, let's say, a flight to Mars?
There's a couple of peculiar aspects about media use in general that I think are illustrated by this example. One is heritage maintenance. You know, if you're from, say, Korea, and you're in a team with mainly Americans and Russians, part of you is going to want a connection with where you're from. That's what immigrants have always done. You know, they're interested in their home media because they want to keep that connection to their culture. At the same time, every immigrant has always looked for stuff that connects him or her to the new culture. So finding stuff that's communal will be another thing. I think the best example is probably many families. There was a time when we only had one TV set. And so we gathered in front of the TV set, and that was part of family life. Then, one of my professors said, then we invented central heating, and all of a sudden, we didn't have to be together anymore. But anyway, at some point, everybody had a TV set in his own or her own bedroom, and that sort of tore families somewhat apart.
Splintered.
But you'll still see that for some things, they will still come together and watch something together. even though a lot of us feel that that's passive behavior, it's still doing something to us. It's creating a kind of bond by being able to watch something together and maybe joke about an actor or comment about something that's happening. It's a very simple way of creating a tiny community. There is not much cause for conflict with that kind of stuff. And you don't need to move. I mean, you can do it when you're scooped up in a little tin can.
I hear you saying, if you stream networks, let the crew watch Big Bang Theory all together. So we're talking about recreating something they know at home and also still having that context. Then.
Right. And of an older era, in a sense, because sometimes when you read about the psychology of space travel, they'll say, well, you know, they'll be bored, so send plenty of DVDs and books along. I think that's not enough because the media can do much more than that. If you recreate that old way of watching television, Tuesday becomes the day that the next episode is going to be available. If it's something we watch together, that's going to be our day to watch the next episode of whatever it is. Not because we have it on a DVD and you've already seen it and I'm going to binge watch it tomorrow. So the old way of interacting with the media, I think, adds something to at least that situation.
So your advice would be to NASA, what would it be?
Well, make sure, I mean, all the guys up there and all the girls up there are going to be really good with computers, so they'd be hacking the system if you're not careful. But make sure they have that access to media that helps structure the day.
So stream the broadcast and cable networks, stream radio.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. And maybe even sort of reduce what the technological possibilities of today are. For instance, make it more difficult to record something or to watch it with some kind of delay. So now I'm forced to acknowledge that it's Thursday and it's Thursday, 5 o'clock on Earth, at least the place we come from. And that's what anchors us. I'll give you another example. The media have always played a large role in defining seasons. It's the Christmas season. You see that because television is telling you all the time. Adverts are telling you. Movies are telling you. So that's telling us another year has passed. Another thing that you will have trouble with when you're isolated somewhere, whether it's on the North Pole or on a space mission. That's these old little things. Like today you can watch a Christmas movie whenever you like, of course. But there was a time when the whole culture, the media culture, was telling us what time of day it was, what day of the week it was.
And the payoff, I'm sure, once the crew comes home, would be they haven't been disconnected from Earth for all these months or years.
A big effect of the media is telling us, you know, in a very indirect way, but it's telling us about fashion, about changes in language. I studied in England for a while. You can tell that the British language is evolving as a result of watching so much American stuff on television. You know, those kinds of changes, which are implicit. Nobody's telling you, okay, from now on, we're not saying bloke anymore. We're saying guy like the Americans do. Nobody's telling you that. But you get a sense of that by being exposed to media. So that kind of connection to Earth would remain that way. The other example is prisoners. It's one of the reasons why some prisoners like the media. It keeps them, you know, fashion changes, cars look different, the way people talk to each other looks different. Look at an old movie about the Romans. People have sideburns, not because the Romans had sideburns, but because actors in those days had sideburns. And those little signals is what we get from the media.
Interesting stuff. Jan Vandenbulk is a professor of media psychology at the University of Michigan with the secret weapon for deep space travel. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.